The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio, or its employees, or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Draw me close to you. Never let me go. And lay it all down again. To hear you say that I'm a friend. You are my desire. No one else will do. No one else will do.
Good day. The Almighty Creator desires a deep personal relationship with you. The Creator has said regarding unbelievers, why would I want someone to spend eternity with me when they do not believe I exist? So if you're listening to this and you don't believe that the Creator exists, you might like to think about that. If you have some expectation that something nice is going to happen to you when you reach the end of your life, you are sadly mistaken. And in fact, life after death is going to be pretty ugly, and that's a whole subject in its own right. There's a huge amount of evidence that the Almighty exists, and you might want to actually rethink your position. And today is as good a day as any to realize that the Almighty does exist and to commit your life to Him. Regarding believers, the Almighty has also said, why would I want someone to be close to me in heaven, which inherently means I will give them great prestige and authority if they do not have a deep personal relationship with me and have not proven to me they can be trusted in this life. So if you're a believer and you're just carrying on doing your own thing and maybe going to church here and there and just generally not taking responsibility for your relationship with the Almighty, you might like to rethink your position too, because if you are expecting to end up in heaven in a really nice place and you're not doing something to earn that in this life, you're in for probably quite a nasty shock there too. And in that case, this program is for you. We have gone into and will continue to go into a whole diversity of topics around how you develop a deep personal relationship with the Almighty. Title of tonight's talk, Where Will You Spend Eternity? Part 6, based on a book written in early 2004 and revised in 2015. In this context, the Almighty has said, I created human beings, this planet and this universe, for men and women to be my friends, my companions, to explore and learn and develop together. My greatest grief is that almost no person understands this, let alone seeks such a relationship with me. So an overview of tonight's program, we'll have a further look at motives, we'll then look at the judgment seat in heaven and the spiritual context to this, we'll learn that it is vital to seek to be judged in this life, we'll learn that our wounds in this life for Yah, that's the Almighty, are badges of honor in the life to come, we learn that this life is not going to be easy if we serve Yah, but it will be worth it, we look at the visions reported by Rick Joyner. We note that the rules of engagement prevent disclosure of things we've not asked about. We learn about the outer darkness, and we learn about the place of the foolish virgins. Introduction. Who am I? James Robertson. I have a doctorate in civil engineering. I practice as a strategic management consultant in South Africa for about 25 years, and I'm currently a business executive in the United Kingdom. I have over 26 years' experience of actively seeking to draw close to the Almighty following a dramatic encounter with Him on the 12th of March 1993 when He spoke to me audibly in a locked room. And on that day, I decided that I had to rethink my life, and I chose to seek to draw close to Him in every possible way. What I've learned in those 26 years is presented in this series of broadcasts. What is End Time Issue Ministries? It's the organizational vehicle for delivering my message through email articles, websites, this radio program, and physical books. What is this program? The Creator desires a deep personal relationship with you. It represents the essence of my message. And since October last year, I've been progressively broadcasting a variety of teachings around the subject of understanding the Almighty, understanding this life, and understanding what's required to qualify for a high throne in heaven for eternity. See my website, www.endtimeissueministries.org, for more information. That's www.endtimeissueministries.org, one word, for more information. Questions from last week's program. There was a technical hitch, and so I haven't received the questions from last week. There's one question that I did receive. I made a statement that Father expected believers who were married to unbelievers to get divorced. I was challenged and told that divorce is bad for children by somebody whose parents were divorced. This person was challenging my point that you are expected believers to divorce the unbelievers. I went to Father and he said to me, quote, "The majority of children who grow up in the house of an unbelieving man become unbelievers, whereas the majority of the children who grow up in the house of a single believing woman become strong believers, and such women also become strong believers. Therefore, it is good for a believing woman to divorce her unbelieving husband. It is also important to be aware that children are covered by their fathers until the age of 13 when they reach spiritual maturity. Up to that point, they carry the faith of their father. From that point on, they are responsible for their own faith and their own sin. That is why many groups have confirmation, bar mitzvah, and similar rituals at this age. It's really important to understand, if you're a believing woman and you have not yet joined yourself to a man or have not yet had children, if you have children fathered by an unbeliever, your children will, by default, be unbelievers until they consciously, at some point in their life, take a decision to believe. You do not want to have children who grow up as unbelievers because of your foolishness. It's really important, ladies, not to marry an unbelieving man. Believing men, it is really important not to marry an unbelieving woman, but it's easier for you because there are 7 times more believing women than believing men, and therefore you have absolutely no excuse, believing man, to join yourself to an unbelieving woman. Returning to the earlier point, that it is better for a believing woman to divorce and bring her children up on her own because they will become strong, they're much more likely to become strong believers. This is a classic example of where the ways that are right in Father's sight seem completely wrong from a worldly point of view. If you look at it from a worldly point of view, it's much better for children to grow up with both parents, and therefore it's very easy to trap a believing woman in a relationship with an unbelieving man for the sake of the children. And as we saw there, Father says that most of the time that's a disaster. If your single fundamental goal in life is to qualify to be in heaven, and preferably to be in heaven with a significant rank, then as a believing woman with children married to an unbelieving man, you need to get divorced. If you're a believing man married to an unbelieving woman with children, it's a more complex thing, because if you get divorced, the legal system will probably give custody of the children to the woman, because they're not interested in whether she's a believer or an unbeliever. So you'd need to be guided by Father in terms of how you dealt with that. So returning to our theme, where will you spend eternity? And we're looking at continuing the discussion of motives. The reference 64.3 is page 64, paragraph 3 in the version of the book The Final Quest by Rick Joyner that I cited in the previous program. And in 64.3 it is stated that it is together, not individually, that we are to know the secrets of the Almighty. So you will find, if you dig into my writings and my postings on the email list, that certainly in the formative years of my understanding, I was drawing on all sorts of sources for information. We are given to serve Yah as a body, not as one lone individual who does everything on their own. In 66:4, it is indicated that spiritual maturity is always determined by our willingness to sacrifice our own desires for the interests of the kingdom or for the sake of others. This is an essential part of the message of Yeshua, you may know him as Jesus, in Matthew 5 and 6 in the Bible cited above. It is also central to many of the other passages, such as men loving their wives as Yeshua loved the body of believers and died for them, wives submitting to their husbands as Yeshua submitted to those who killed him, etc. In 66:4, it is also indicated that which requires the most sacrifice will always take us to the highest level. So if you're not making sacrifices for Yah, you should not be surprised when you die to find that you're not in a particularly high place in heaven. In other words, a vital point to seeking to qualify for a high throne for eternity is to be willing to make great sacrifices. This can look like letting go of deeply held beliefs, dealing with issues in our own lives that we would rather ignore, doing things we don't want to do or find uncomfortable or inconvenient, loss of popularity, loss of following, loss of family, loss of finances, physical suffering, or any other form of sacrifice. Joyner talks about the judgment seat on page 75 of the final quest in the edition that I cited before. We find the judgment seat of the anointing of Yah, which is Christ. Important to understand that the phrase Christ there is correctly translated as the anointing of Yah, not Yeshua, Jesus, or the man at all. It is the Spirit of Yah on the man. This is the Spirit of Yah is the judge. So the judgment seat is introduced. If we refer to Romans in the Protestant Bible, chapter 14, verses 10 to 13. But why dost thou judge thy brother, or why dost thou set at naught thy brother? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of the anointing of Yah. For it is written, As I live, saith Yah, the eternally self-existing, you may know that as the Lord. Every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall confess to Yah. So then every one of us shall give account of himself to Yah. Let us not therefore judge one another any more, but judge us rather than no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way. 2 Corinthians 5:10 states, For we must all appear before the judgment seat of the anointing of Yah, that every one may receive the things done in his body, according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad. In 75:5, it is stated that the judgment is the greatest fear in creation, and it is also the source of the greatest wisdom that we can know in this life or in the life to come. It is apparent that seeking to know the judgments of the Almighty and thereby to know how to please Him is an essential component of qualifying for a high throne for eternity. We will only get to a high throne via the judgment. Therefore, it is important that we are aware of the judgment and what it entails. We can only do this if we are willing to seek His face and if we are willing to ask Him to judge us and guide us constantly. In 75 and 76, it is stated that believers are not giving much attention to the judgment. In 76:1, it is stated that the greatest authority that men can receive will be entrusted only to those who are willing to experience judgment in this life. I'll read that again. The greatest authority that men can receive will be entrusted only to those who are willing to experience judgment in this life. Thus, the only way to a high throne in heaven, which is, after all, a judge's or ruler's throne, is to be judged in this life, so one can be found to fit to judge or rule together with Yeshua in the life to come. Refer Revelation 2:26-27, referring to overcomers cited above. 79:2 states, Yah has a different definition of peace and safety than we do. To be wounded in the fight is a great honor. It is by Yeshua's stripes that we are healed, and it is through our stripes that we too are given the authority for healing. In the very place that the enemy wounds us, once we are healed, we're given the power to heal others. Healing was a basic part of Yeshua's ministry, and it is also a basic part of ours. That is one reason why the Almighty allows bad things to happen to his people, so that they can receive the compassion for others by which the power of healing operates. That is why the Apostle Paul told of his beatings and stonings when his authority was questioned. Every wound, every bad thing that happens to us can be turned into the authority to do good. Every beating that Paul took resulted in salvation for others. Every wound that every warrior takes will result in others being saved, healed, or restored. I want to point out here, the original text uses the phrase the Lord's, or the Lord. And in the first two locations that this occurs, the Lord refers to Yeshua. In the third instance, it refers to the Almighty. I spoke at length about this early on in this series, back around October, November, that the phrase the Lord is used to describe the Almighty in the English Bible in the Old Testament, and used to describe Yeshua in the New Testament, resulting in the mistaken belief that Yeshua is the Almighty. He is not the Almighty. He is a human, created with a remarkable miracle, but a human nonetheless. He would have had no authority on earth if he was not 100% human. So he gives you an example of what you can achieve as an anointed one. Continuing with the judgment seat, it is important to understand that the losses and wounds that we suffer in this life, provided they result from obedience to the Almighty, do constitute treasure in heaven. In other words, if one is praying to be an overcomer, praying to hear the words, well done, thou good and faithful servant, and similar prayers, then one should not be surprised when one experiences attacks, both spiritual and physical, loss, etc., for the kingdom, for the sake of the kingdom. Consider James chapter 1, verses 2 to 4. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. The word rendered temptations means a putting to proof by experiment of good, experience of evil, solitation, discipline, or provocation, by implication, adversity. So in other words, count it all joy when you fall into diverse adversity, knowing that that the trying of your faith worketh patience. This is about being tested in our obedience and willingness to suffer loss. Are we willing to literally take up the stake and literally follow Yeshua, either to physical torture or to spiritual torment and loss? Really important, folks. If you really want to get to a high position in heaven, you are going to come into direct confrontation with the forces of darkness. They are going to do everything they can to destroy you. And until you have got to a place where you are living above sin, without sin, free of sin, that you've dealt with all your legacy sin, you've gone through a sort of cleansing process that I've spoken about before, you are not going to get to a place where you are free of torment and attack, and you are going to have to overcome through all of that. So overcoming sin is a huge thing if you're really a committed believer. Continuing with the judgment seat, 79:4 indicates that there is no courage unless there is real danger, and reminds us of the Almighty's exhortation to Joshua to be strong and courageous. Refer the book of Joshua, chapter 1, verses 5 to 9, quoting the Almighty. Note that the word there translated Joshua is in fact Yahushua, exactly the same name as the prophet from Nazareth, who we esteem as Jesus. But his real name was Yahushua. This is also Yahushua. Yahshua means Yah the salvation. Yah is salvation, and is a common, or in those days was a common Hebrew name for a boy. So coming to Yahushua 1:5-9, quoting the Almighty, "There shall not be any man able to stand before thee all the days of their life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. Be strong and of a good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I sware unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law, which Moshe my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed. For Yah, the eternally self-existing, thy mighty one, is with thee, whithersoever thou goest." Here, immediately after telling Yahshua that he will be with Yahshua as he was with Moses or Moshe, the Almighty three times instructs Yahshua to be strong and courageous. This is Yahshua, as in Joshua, the Old Testament prophet, not Yahshua, the prophet from Nazareth. The Almighty would go with Israel. However, Israel had to fight the battle, which included seeking the Almighty for guidance and assistance and being obedient to the commandments of the Almighty. In other words, both a physical and a spiritual battle, where the essence of the spiritual battle is to do what the Almighty tells one to do, no matter how our natural minds judge it. Like taking one's only son to sacrifice, in other words, kill. Like walking around a city for 7 days so the walls fall down. Like raising a staff to the Red Sea so that the waters part. Like telling the sun and moon to stand still. Like being thrown into a den of lions and coming out unscathed. Like being beaten and dying on a stake without committing sin. Like so many other instances, it is a battle, folks. If you are seeking to serve the Almighty, the forces of darkness don't like it, and they're going to come against you. The only one to get way to get free of that is to live without sin. There's some indication, the above examples are some indication of the courage the Almighty is seeking in his overcomers. 84, paragraph 4 states, "Until you have beheld and appreciated the depths of the treasures of salvation, you cannot see the glory that comes from suffering for the sake of the good news or gospel. Once you have seen it, you are ready for the tests that will release the highest levels of spiritual authority into your life. These scars are the glory that we will carry forever. This is why even the wounds Yahushua suffered are with him in heaven. You can still see his wounds. These are the medals of honor in heaven. All who carry them love Yah and his truth more than their own lives. These are the ones who followed the Lamb wherever he went, being willing to suffer for the sake of truth, righteousness, and the salvation of men. True leaders of Yah's people who carry genuine spiritual authority must have first proven their devotion this way. This reinforces the message that it is an honor and a privilege to suffer in the service of the Almighty." In 81:2, it states that it is through these suffering that one's worthiness to receive the great authority that will be given to those who become members of the Almighty's own household are surely proven. Folks, this is really, really important stuff. We are here to become friends of the Almighty. If we become friends of the Almighty, we will receive a high reward. However, we will experience opposition. We will experience loss. We will experience either spiritual or emotional, physical or emotional or spiritual damage and harm. You will sob your eyes out over certain things. You will potentially lose loved ones. You will potentially lose businesses. The question is, how will you handle it? This is a battle. If you are not in the thick of the battle and suffering loss and overcoming loss and overcoming sin and overcoming evil, why would you think that the Almighty would give you a high throne? Please think about it. In 81.3, it is stated that courage is a demonstration of faith, and that the Almighty never promised that his way would be easy, but he has assured us that it would be worth it. In 82.3, it is stated to Joyner that because you have been faithful in a few things, you will now be given the great honor of going back to suffer, that you may be made a ruler over many more. Each of us must ask ourselves whether we are willing to make sacrifices in order to become rulers in heaven versus living a comfortable life on earth and something much less in the life to come. In 83.2, Joyner states, "What seems right is usually the least fruitful path and often the road to failure. Throughout my journey, the path of greatest risk was the path that led to the greatest reward." In 83.3, we are advised that it takes more faith to walk in the high realms of the Spirit. It is suggested that the map to the kingdom of the Almighty is contained in the words, "If you seek to save your life, you will lose it, but if you will lose your life for my sake, you will find it." We are advised that these words alone can keep us on track. The example I used just now of the believing woman divorcing the unbelieving husband is an example of this. The obvious worldly decision is to stay married for the sake of the children. Yah's way is to get divorced, and if you have to bring up the children on your own, do so, because it means that you will become strong as a believer and your children will become strong as a believer. Doesn't make any sense to the carnal, normal, worldly, human mind, but so important to understand that. Moving on to Joyner's experience of the judgment, starting on page 84, Joyner reports a series of visions in which he is taken into the hall of judgment in heaven and experiences judgment of himself. This experience includes meetings with people who have already died and been judged. In his conversations with these people, he learns much about the judgment and how life on earth is viewed very differently by the Almighty relative to how men view it. Insofar as each person is judged immediately they die, these visions were all real experiences, and Joyner did actually meet with the people concerned. It is important to be aware that the so-called Day of Judgment is the day on which the outcome of the contest will be determined, i.e. whether Satan has won or lost the competition to totally corrupt mankind. See the menu item, The Contest, on the website. Folks, so important to understand that there is this battle raging. That Satan and the satanic realm, billions of messengers, angels, over 100 billion demons, ancestor spirits, deceased unbeliever human beings, are all striving to make sure that at the end of the present millennium, which is about 3003, about 980 something years from now, 81 years from now, that there will not be a single believer on earth who is free of sin and in right standing with Father at such a level that they can bring Satan before the court of heaven for the final judgment, for Satan and his followers to be cast into the lake of fire and brimstone and utterly destroyed. If there is not a single believer in right standing on that date, Satan will win and he will rule on earth for eternity. That's the judgment. What are you doing, if you're a believer, to help Yah win the contest? It is vitally important to be aware that in terms of the rules of engagement, those are the rules that regulate the contest. Neither Father, Yahshua, nor the people interviewed in the visions are permitted to directly correct wrong beliefs and teachings. Thus, Joyner was not corrected in terms of a number of serious errors which are perpetuated in the book. We are each responsible for seeking truth. And in this context, constant seeking after truth, fasting, etc., as described in the article, Seven Components in Growing Close to the Yah, which was broadcast a couple of months ago, are vital. See the menu item, Seven Components of Drawing Close, on the website. See also the article on the rules of engagement for more information. Hover over the menu item, the contest, and then select rules of engagement. This is a complex subject, but the fundamental principle is that if you are in error, Father is not permitted to tell you, either himself or through somebody else, that you're in error. He cannot correct you because the rules of engagement say he is not permitted to correct you. You have to pray prayers like, Father, show me the level of my present deception and how to correct it. Father, lead me into all truth by your Spirit. Father, judge me severely and correct me harshly that I may serve you more perfectly. You have got to give him permission to lead you into all truth, and then you've got to allow him to lead you to places such as my website, which has what I believe is a lot of truth, and you have to assess that for yourself, and you need to be praying those prayers in order to be able to gauge accurately whether what I present on those pages is indeed truth or not. Continuing with Joyner's experience of the judgment, I'm certain that Joyner did experience the visions he describes, and that most, but not all, of what is reported in the final quest is from the Almighty and is for our edification, instruction, and guidance. Joyner specifically records that in some cases he allowed some time to elapse before recording his experiences, and it is my understanding that in that allowing that to elapse, his memory faded and he added bits and pieces in which are not accurate. We must also be constantly be aware of the rules of engagement, preventing even the Almighty from correcting our errors and sin unless we have first prayed for him to do so and do this on an ongoing basis. It's no good just one day saying, Father, show me the level of my present deception, how to correct it, and then go on living the rest of your life on the assumption that that one prayer has fixed the problem. No, you have to pray that on a daily basis. You need to fast and pray, seeking truth. The journey to all truth is a long journey. It's a hard journey. There's a lot of material on the website to help you, but you have to do the work. So you're coming back to the rules of engagement. Your experience of the Almighty is in large measure constrained and determined by what you pray and what those close to you pray for you. Joyner describes the judgment experience commencing at the outer reaches of the outer darkness until he eventually reaches the throne and subsequently is permitted to have conversations with certain people who are sitting on thrones. I understand this information to be enormously important for anyone who aspires to spend eternity in heaven. If you're somebody who believes the Bible is important and you've read the Bible more than once or twice, then you need to read The Final Quest at least once or twice. It is a highly anointed book, even though it does contain some error, and there's a huge amount to learn from it. Coming to the outer darkness, in the vision, Joyner enters into the judgment hall through a door. As the door closes behind him, he finds himself in, quote, the most frightening darkness I had ever experienced. 84.5, he describes a terrible battle with fear and even states that he began to think that he had stepped into hell itself. I understand this to be the outer darkness referred to in various passages in previous broadcasts. It seems, then, that there is a place in heaven which is frightening. This is a place for believers, and Father Yah says that today the vast majority of people believe end up there. He refers to this place as the trash heap of heaven. He is highly displeased with the people who find themselves here because they ignored them throughout their lives, except when they momentarily believed. Note that these people still pass through hell to pay the price for their unconfessed sin before arriving at this destination for eternity. Folks, being a unbelieving believer is going to lead to a pretty horrible outcome. In fact, it's probably the worst outcome possible for any human being, is to end up as a as an unbelieving believer. In other words, you believed at some stage, maybe you went to church once or twice, and then you carried on just living your life as before. You're going to find there that because you ignored Father all your life, He is going to ignore you for eternity. He's going to put you in the outer darkness. You are never going to get out of it. Folks, it's not worth it. Don't do it. Turn around now. Returning to Joyner's account, in this location, Joyner does not report meeting anyone or having any conversations. This does not mean that there were not people there, simply that it was so dark that he may not have met anyone who might have been there, and he might not have been able to receive what they might have said to him, as they were constrained by the rules of engagement. And it's, I infer, that Joyner would not have believed that what he was seeing there was possible. After entering into the outer darkness, Joyner reports that he cried out for forgiveness and for help, and then started to see Yahshua on the stake as a light in the distance, and started to move toward it. As he did so, he began to experience peace. As he moved forward, he describes no longer feeling cold, then starting to see a dim light, which gradually became a glorious light, which then became so wonderful that I felt that I was entering into heaven itself. In 85.3, Joyner describes how he soon reached a point where the beauty of it could not even be imagined by any reference to human architecture. He reports that he was overwhelmed with joy and beauty. So a huge continuum there, from a terrible place in heaven. Folks, I cannot stress that enough. In heaven, there is a really frightening, horrible place. And then all the way through to a glorious light, something that is really wonderful, something that cannot even be imagined by any reference to human architecture, something that, Joyner says, overwhelmed him with joy and beauty. That's where you want to be, folks, in that place where there's huge joy and beauty, not in the other place. It's worth working for. Then move on. Joyner moves further into the judgment hall and comes to the place of the foolish virgins. In 86.3, Joyner describes noticing enormous numbers of people standing in ranks. He describes them as, quote, dazzling, more regal than anyone I'd ever seen. Their countenance was captivating. Never had such peace and confidence graced a human face. Each one was beautiful beyond any earthly comparison, end of quote. Joyner enters into conversation with one of these people, who informs him that they are, quote, the great cloud of witnesses, and that they, quote, know all of you, and we see all that you do. This information in its own right is sobering. This great cloud of witnesses in heaven are in some way able to observe all that we are doing. In addition to the Almighty, they are seeing what we do or do not do. They see what we do in private. They see our arguments, our sin, etc. So if your parents are believers, they are watching you still. Something to really think about, folks. There's a whole bunch of people in heaven who are watching your every move. They're not necessarily all watching you, but there are people who can, they can all watch you personally. So you might want to think about that in terms of how you live the rest of your life. On page 87, Joyner recognizes someone that he had known on earth, and they enter into conversation. In 87.3, this man states that heaven is much greater than we could have dreamed while on earth, and states that the room where Joyner finds himself is, quote, but the threshold of realms of glory that are far beyond the ability we had to comprehend. So heaven is clearly a desirable place to spend eternity. This same man goes on to say, the second death is much more terrible than we understood. This is a sobering warning. The second death is judgment in hell, a place of correction. There's a series of web pages on hell on the website with some graphic color paintings by somebody who was taken into hell. Horrible stuff. And that is for believers. for dealing, paying the price for their unconfessed sin. Yeshua, Jesus, died a terrible death to provide us with a way for forgiveness of our sin. If we do not avail ourselves of that covenant of the taking the bread and wine communion on a regular basis and repenting of our sin, we will be tormented and tortured in hell before we make it into heaven. Folks, really important, clean up your act. It's something you need to do right now. The man says further, if I had known on earth what I know here, I would not have lived the way that I did. This whole series of broadcasts is to hopefully challenge people who read this or listen to this to think differently about how they live their lives. There's huge opportunity. I hope that I'm making that visible to you. In 88:2, the same man makes the point that there is a marked difference between honoring one another in love and worshipping them. He further states that if this was understood on earth, we would treat others very differently. That speaks, for example, to worshipping the pastor or the priest or the imam or the rabbi, putting that person on a pedestal and not critically examining what they have to say and just following them unquestioningly. Continuing with the foolish virgins in 88:4, this man advises Joyner that we are the least of those here. So Joyner has just come into the judgment hall. This is in the place where people are visible, the furthest distance from the throne. When Joyner questions this, the man continues in 89:1, there is an aristocracy of sorts here. The rewards for our earthly lives are the eternal possessions that we will have forever. This great multitude are those whom Yeshua called foolish virgins. He goes on to explain that the people in this group knew Yah, the externally self-existing, and trusted in the stake of Yeshua for salvation. But we did not really live for Yah, but for ourselves. We did not keep our vessels filled with the oil of the Holy Spirit. We have eternal life, but we've wasted our lives on earth. In 89:3, Joyner protests in response that the foolish virgins gnashed their teeth in the outer darkness, and in 89:4, the man he is speaking to confirms that this was the case. He further states the grief that we experienced when we understood how we had so wasted our lives was beyond any grief possible on earth. Please hear me. So important. The speaker further confirms that Joyner is standing among the lowest rank in heaven and states that there is no greater folly than to know the great salvation of Yah, but to then go on living for yourself. To come here and learn the reality of that is a grief beyond what an earthly soul can experience. This whole passage is talking about typically traditional churchgoers, mosque goers, synagogue goers who never get filled with the Spirit of Yah, never get into a relationship with Yah, have a relationship with their Bible, their pastor, their imam, their rabbi, whatever, and they do not have a relationship with Father. That's why they're foolish virgins. They were never filled with His Spirit. Lots and lots of people fall into that category. In 89:5, Joyner questions how this can be since he's experiencing these people as more glorious and full of joy and more joy and peace than he had imagined possible. In 89:6, the other man states that the love of the Almighty is also far greater than is understood on earth. So in other words, despite the fact that these people really had treated Yah quite shabbily, they've still been rewarded in a dramatic fashion when they finally make it into heaven after they've paid the price for their unconfessed sin in hell. In 93, the speaker describes further details of the continuum of rank in heaven. Quote, the next level of rank here is many times greater than what we have. Each level after that is much greater than the previous one. It is not just that each level has an even more glorious spiritual body, but that each level is closer to the throne from where all the glory comes. So important, folks. There are huge rewards for faithfully serving Father on earth during this life. Those rewards are open to every human being on the planet. It doesn't matter who you are, where you are. You can be an out-and-out Satanist today, and Father will redeem you If you commit your life to him, he will teach you. He will take you by the hand. If you pray the prayers that I spoke about a few months ago, if you go through the rituals, the processes that I described a few months ago, you can clean up your life, get free of sin, and then actively grow close to Father, as described in that whole series on seven components of drawing close. So to recap, we've looked at further at motives. We then looked at the judgment seat in heaven and the spiritual context to this. We learned that it is vital to seek to be judged in this life. We learned that our wounds in this life are badges of honor in the life to come. We learned that this life is not going to be easy if we serve Yah, but it will be worth it. We looked at the visions reported by Rick Joyner. We noted that the rules of engagement prevent disclosure of things we have not asked about. We learned about the outer darkness, and we learned about the place of the foolish virgins. Folks, this teaching today is really, really important. It's getting to the heart of understanding the opportunity, understanding the threats. You can draw close to Father. You can become his friend. And you can choose to do nothing with what you heard from me today and end up in the outer darkness. And if you're an unbeliever, you can end up as an ancestor spirit, a demon, trapped on earth, reliant on other living human beings or animals or messengers, angels, to transport you. Huge range of possible outcomes to your life. What do you choose? What do you want to do? I know what I'm going for, and that is for a high throne. And if you go back over the previous broadcasts, which are on the website, you'll get the prayers and a whole lot of guidance on how to do that. So, five key documents on the main menu on the website. The Creator desires a deep personal relationship with you near the bottom of the menu, the sort of foundational teaching on this topic. Seven components in drawing close to the Creator near the bottom of the menu. Detail I've discussed already. Recommended worship near the bottom of the menu. Songs that I recommend strongly to sing and listen to day in and day out. The Creator's name is Yah, the eternally self-existing, at the top of the menu. Really important to understand how the Almighty's name works. Where will you spend eternity? What is required in order to qualify to sit on a high throne for eternity? The article in which this series of broadcasts is based, near the bottom of the menu. All of this available at www.endtimeissueministries.org. Transcripts of nearly all teachings in the series are available on the website at the bottom of on the radio page. Recordings of nearly all of the teachings broadcast so far are available on the radio page, and they're all available at http://relationshipwithcreatorradio.com. Click on the show and then on podcasts. Books constituting a compilation of most writings published since 1998 are available near the bottom of the menu at the compilation of most writings page and will be physically available soon. They've been printed, they're just being bound. I publish regular email articles. Email james@endtimeissueministries.org to be added to the list or to seek counsel or prayer or to give me feedback. Visit the website and use the Google search, article keyword cloud, table of contents, and article search to locate the information you're looking for. There's a huge amount of information on the website, the culmination of 26 years of seeking. In closing, thank you for listening. Please send me your questions on the W4CY webpage. I will answer them next broadcast. Please email me to join the mailing list at james@endtimeissueministries.org. That's james@endtimeissueministries.org. If you decide to draw close to the Almighty, please let me know and we can connect by Skype, Zoom, email or telephone so that I can help you with your journey. I would really be delighted to hear from you. I hope to connect with you again next week when we will continue to explore how to become a friend of the Creator. In saying that, I just want to say to you, it really doesn't matter who you are today as you listen to this. It doesn't matter whether you're male or female, doesn't matter whether you're black or white, doesn't matter whether you've got blue eyes or brown eyes, doesn't matter whether you've got blonde hair or black hair, doesn't matter what nation you are, doesn't matter what tribe you are, doesn't matter whether you're educated or not educated, doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor. Father Yah, the Almighty Creator of the heavens and earth, wants you to become His friend. It's there for you. I urge you, go for it. Don't hold back. You've heard now a few descriptions of heaven. It's possible for you to qualify for the highest rank in heaven, to become a friend. The only thing that's stopping you is you. The information you need to do it is on my website, in my teachings, in these radio broadcasts. Thanks so much. Good night. Father, I-